talk. I'm going to call this budget. Let's get started with the bang. Court and public safety meeting to order. We do have a quorum present. And Ms. Margaret, I believe you do have our sign-in sheet.
I do. Thank you.
So we are going to go ahead and get started. Do I have any special reports? Any old business? Are y'all able to hear me okay? Yes? No? We don't want to get any ugly emails.
Push it back.
Just push it. Is that better? How about that? Okay, now we got it. All right, is there any old business? The only thing that I have old business-wise, I did get an email this past week from Rick Sal's office. I'm dealing with the animal shelter. There was an entire list of questions that varied in detail from do we want this type of washing machine or that type of washing machine, different details, and to be completely honest, with everything else that has been on our plate with this committee meeting, I have not dealt with that this week, but I do plan on getting with some of the other people that have been involved so far, and we'll try to get those questions answered and get that back to Emily so that we can move forward on the construction drawings, because that is what we're waiting on right now. As far as the animal shelter goes, is the detailed construction drawings. All right, and from there, we will move on to new business. I will entertain a motion for proposed ordinance 2320, the data center ordinance.
I'll move that we consider 2320.
Second.
Since this is something that we have literally been working on up until the last few minutes before court, Philip, if you don't mind, I was going to see if you would read that in full.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Jessica, it might be better than reading. I can just walk you through it page by page, section by section, and that might be a little quicker and people can understand a little bit about what it is.
There are some extra copies as well up here at the front if anybody would like to see a copy for themselves.
And I'll go through this as quick as I can. Going too fast, feel free to stop and ask questions. Basically, the blueprint for this particular ordinance was originated with AAC. I'll outline some things that are a little bit different with our ordinance than the AAC ordinance, but essentially you'll see, we can, this for time's sake, can come here to Article 1. The most important thing that I think you'll want to realize, this ordinance only applies to the unincorporated areas of Faulkner County, Arkansas. So that would mean this does not apply to Conway, Bologna, Greenbrier. It's only for unincorporated, so for our rural sections. So certainly for communities like Bunno, this applies. Article 2, definition, something we skip over a lot often, but I'm not going to go through all of those. Let me point out probably the most important parts of the definitions. The second definition is probably the one that's most critical to the ordinance, which is the definition of a cryptocurrency data center. And before I go forward, let's make sure we all understand part of the issue right now is we have a state statute that will go into effect on August 1st. That statute basically says that we can't discriminate against cryptocurrency data centers from other data centers and ordinances. It doesn't mean that we can't pass an ordinance. We can come back later and we might even amend this ordinance, but it says we can't discriminate against crypto mining businesses. And I don't know what the state's going to do. There's discussion about if there's a special session dealing with the fiscal issue, whether or not they'll take this up. I just want to let you know that this ordinance specifically is about the noise level from cryptocurrency data centers. It's not about agricultural equipment. It's not about commercial enterprises elsewhere. It is strictly targeted or intended for cryptocurrency data center. So there we have the definition that talks about that it's a lease or owned floor space for the primary purpose to operate data processing equipment for cryptocurrency mining. So that's the key here. I'll keep going. Article 3, basically Article 3 is essentially much like a permitting plan. So here in Faulkner County, people often ask, do we have zoning? And the answer is yes, limited zoning. We zone cell phone towers. We have land use permitting, if you will, for cell phone towers and for floodplain. So this would be the third type of land use permitting that Faulkner County would have if we were to pass this ordinance. And basically what that Article 3 incorporates a plan for how the any new proposed cryptocurrency data centers would need to, a plan they would need to follow in order to be legal here in Faulkner County. Now, this does not apply to current crypto mining centers in our county. This would only be for the future crypto mining centers that may occur. So if someone wants to build in rural part of Faulkner County, they would have to follow this ordinance, which includes, one, notifying all residents within a half mile. And then they have to actually file that notification with the county clerk. They have to make sure the county judge is notified of the proposal. One of the big issues with our current center is, I think, a lot of people were caught off guard by the center going up and what it was, and so this hopefully will deal with that, so that proposed crypto mining centers would have to notify the public within a half mile radius of where they're going up that they are planning on operating. It also requires them to do a noise study, basically a pre-plan and a post-plan. So they have to, one, explain kind of what they're building, the noise attenuation that they would put along with that, and then after they get, after they're constructed, they have to file another engineering, I guess it's not a certification, but basically that's on item 4, the post-completion noise study requirements, where they would have to show that the third-party engineer conducted the study and that it meets whatever it was that they said they needed to meet, and they're within the ordinance. So all the Article 3 is basically, it's permitting. There's not an actual permit there, but if they violate it, then they're in violation of the ordinance, and so they're subject to the same penalties as if they were too loud or whatever else. So that's the Article 3. Article 4 is the procedure for measurement. A lot of this comes down to law enforcement and what a court is going to require of law enforcement in order to find that the citation is valid and needs to be, or the defendant would be guilty, but it includes things like calibration, that the sound level meter would be calibrated every 2 years. That's a little bit different than the AAC ordinance. You see that it's complaint driven, but which basically means that any property owner, if they feel like that the noise would be too loud, could call the sheriff's office and the code enforcement officer could come out and measure it. This goes as far as where the meter has to be placed to measure, and it talks about the monitoring report that the deputy would need to fill out to show that the date and the time of the measurement, the temperature, all that would need to be included in that report, basically to create really a sound legal argument for when they go to court to show that, you know, the sound wasn't, or the readings weren't made in the middle of a hurricane, and there weren't trains going by, and whatever else. Then we get to Article 5. This is probably, I think, what most people would have their eyes drawn to, because this is the actual noise limit set. So this is the noise limit for future and for current crypto mining facilities. Now, the AAC recommended a 65 decibel level from the time of 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., or 55 decibels from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. It was in talking with the Cryptocurrency Alliance that's based out of Little Rock. When we were talking with them and sent them a proposed ordinance, they replied that they thought 65 was probably too much. and that 60 would be a more would be better for the citizens of Faulkner County. So that is the suggestion. It can move. I would definitely say we have to remember that sound and the physics associated with sound aren't always linear. So just because we reduce the decibel level by 10% does not necessarily mean we're reducing the sound by 10%. Like sometimes that's actually greater, and that's really outside of my wheelhouse. We'd need to talk with someone that's more of a scientist or engineer than I am, and if we wanted to reduce or increase those levels. But this is based on the recommendations from that blockchain council or crypto council in Little Rock. We move on to Article 6, violation. This basically talks about who can be guilty of violating the ordinance, and probably the most, not necessarily the most important part, but unfortunately, Quorum Court is only given response, or can only use the tools that the state legislature has given it. The Quorum Court does not have the responsibility to disallow any property transaction in the county. So, for instance, if the Russians wanted to come and buy a farm in Enders, there's nothing the Quorum Court can do to prevent that. Now, the state might have something available as far as legislation to prevent that. From a federal level, there might be something to prevent that. But Quorum Court can only use the powers that it's been given, the legislative powers that it's been given from the Constitution and from statutes. And so we're limited in basically creating punishment, a misdemeanor. And in this particular case, the misdemeanor is capped at $1,000 per occurrence that can double. I think sometimes there's a confusion about misdemeanors. Some misdemeanors can go up to $2,500. However, those are state legislated misdemeanors. County misdemeanors, $1,000. And so that's exactly what this penalty clause does. It puts it at the max $1,000 per violation and shows that each day is a continuing violation. The one thing that this court may want to consider adding that's not in there currently is whether this court wants to add a $500 continuing violation. That has not been included in here, but that's also a remedy available. Frankly, money probably makes a big difference to a lot of us. I'm not sure how much difference it makes, because the most important part, or one of the most important parts of the ordinance, is that it allows a judge to potentially cease the operations if there's continual violation. And that's in two forms. One, a judge could use this ordinance to cease operations, or he could potentially use contempt. If they're not following an order that he gave, then a judge can order that defendant in contempt and could shut down a crypto mining facility at that point. And then, of course, it has the emergency clause in it, which is Article 9. This is one of those things that if we want a ordinance that specifies crypto mining as the primary commercial component, then that's something we probably need to do this month. If we're wanting to broaden it and say all data processing centers, then that's something we probably could do next month. But I think we'd have a different set of issues if we make it broader and say data processing, because then people start worrying about commercial enterprises other than crypto mining. So in short, that's what it is, and that's where we are. And I'll be happy to take any questions y'all may have.
I'll start off. I have two questions, actually. The first one is about the penalties, and ordinance, it reads that any offending party shall be punished by fine of up to $1,000 for any one specified offense or violation. Each day of a continuing violation constitutes a separate violation. So can you explain to me when I read that sounds like each day would be $1,000.
It could, but
you were explaining $500 continuation.
Here's the problem. Each day that law enforcement writes a ticket could be $1,000. The odds are that's unfair in some ways for our law enforcement to expect them to go out every day and conduct a test, which is likely to take, an hour. I mean, if you include travel time, you know, it's probably 2 hours to go up there with all the equipment they're going to need to calibrate it, to do everything that's outlined here and get that clear ordinance, that to take three different measures, all that. So what this does is $1,000 is the specific offense, and certainly a judge could, without a separate citation, fine them up to $1,000, but probably not. Probably what's going to happen is if a law enforcement officer writes the citation on January 1st, the court date's going to be March 1st, and at that March 1st hearing, if the judge finds the defendant guilty, then he's going to have a $1,000 fine, and from then on, if he does not correct the mistake, then that's a potentially, if you wanted to, you could add a $500 continuing violation on that.
And that continuing violation would start from the court date or from the date of the citation?
From the court date. The problem with doubling it is, once again, we're limited. Well, you can't have a misdemeanor more than $2,500 anyhow. You're able, there's a small provision, and I know this is complicated, but where you can double it, but we're talking about pennies essentially at this point, and I don't think it's worth invalidating the entire worrying about invalidating the entire ordinance over a potential $1,500 difference. We want to make it as clear as possible to the judge to let them know exactly what authority we have and what authority he has.
Thank you. My second question is that it is complaint driven. Now, somewhere in all of these different phases that we went through, I thought that I had read somewhere that the complainant had to be a landowner that was up against the crypto mine. Is that
not necessarily against the crypto mine? It's in the definition of Article 4, Paragraph 1, where it says the measurement will be taken from where the complaint from the result of the complaint. So, for instance, if Mr. McMillan were to complain, Mr. McMillan lives a bit farther than Miss Anderson, I believe, from the current crypto mine. So if Mr. McMillan were to complain, then it would potentially be from the edge of his property. However, if Miss Anderson were to complain, it would be from the edge of her property.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any other committee members have questions?
I couldn't know less about what a sound level meter is. Can you explain that? What's the cost of them? Where can you get them? Do they have to be trained to use them, I assume?
I think those are good questions. I'm going to actually lean on former Justice Higgins, County Administrator Higgins, to answer those questions. He's more knowledgeable about it than I.
So, Justice Schock, I actually have been going by a specific site every day for the past couple of months, and so I purchased a BB sound meter from Amazon. It was less than $100. Typically, by various code, you want to have them calibrated, you know, very similar to a radar gun, calibrated every 2 years. So when you buy it, it comes calibrated. You can actually buy a calibration device that takes about 15 minutes to calibrate it. It's very simple to do so. But the DB meter, how I go and check it every day, I pull up in the close to the site. I roll down my window, shut off my truck, make sure there's not any traffic going by, hold it out, point it towards the site, and it gives me the reading. It's very simple to use. I could probably train you how to use it in less than 5 minutes.
Well, the first thing that I think of is this, like, admissible in court, because I come from Amazon, who's, I mean, you see where I'm going with
the legality. Yeah, you buy them and they're certified, the ones that you buy. They're cheap ones. I have several apps on my phone that I actually used for a while to get rough readings. It's not a certifiable sound readings, but DB meters that you can buy from Amazon, you can buy them from Northern Tool, you can buy them from Granger, that come certified with a calibration certificate.
I'm still kind of skeptical about the legality of certain types. You've been to court many times.
Yes, sir.
Have defense attorneys there. I mean, I'm just kind of thinking later on.
Mm-hmm.
You know. All right.
And Before we go any further, I don't know how many of our committee members have actually, or JPs, have actually been to the site and listened to what these residents are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. I live about 6,000 feet from the site in Bono. I cannot personally hear it from my home, but if I walk back to the back of our property and down into the creek, I can hear it. I also drive by very often and stop and listen. One of the videos that I have seen, there's a multitude of them on Facebook, some of you guys have probably seen them, that are recordings of the actual crypto mine that were done. I believe Justice Allison did one standing out in Ms. Anderson's front yard, and he was recording the crypto mine. That's what his intent were. Over the 4th of July weekend, I was scrolling through Facebook, and I saw a video of Mrs. Anderson, who is here tonight, and it was of her children in their backyard, and it appeared that they were having a 4th of July get-together. They were swimming in their pool, jumping off the diving board and playing and, laughing, and just like all of us, celebrating the holiday, the 4th of July. And the video struck me. It was something that I really felt like everybody needed to see and hear. So if we have this pulled up, if we can go ahead and play it. And I do have Ms. Anderson's permission.
Good job. That huge jump. Good job. That huge jump.
I don't know about you, but when I watched that video and I saw the joy of those children playing, it made me angry to hear the noise in the background and what she has to listen to 24/7. So I definitely want that to be taken into consideration. Until you experience the noise and understand what it sounds like, I think it brings on a new take on it, for sure. Any additional questions from our committee?
I know some people think $500 doesn't seem like much, but I think that if we can add that $500 continuing violation fine, I think that looking at what we're dealing with now in the hopes that we can prevent anyone else from dealing with it in the future, I think we should try to make this as strict as possible. And so if we have an opportunity to increase the fine by $500 for continuing violations, I would really like to see that in there.
Just need to make a motion.
I will move then that we add this $500 continuing violation.
All those in favor?
Boss or Shaw?
Shaw.
Okay.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The amendment passes. Motion. Any other questions or comments from our committee members?
Yeah, I would just like to point out, I want to thank Ms. Anderson for being here. I know she's been here before. Talked with her several times. I know you have all as well. But she has informed me on numerous occasions of promises that the people who operate this mine have made to her that have gone unkept. I think that they had promised her last week or the week before they were going to start this temporary sound barrier. And I believe, I talked to her just a little while ago, she said just this week they have now started taking out some trees so they can put up a hay wall or something. They're very slow, and there's a big perception out there. I'm not saying this is that what they're doing. But the perception among people I talk to in the community over there is that they are delaying, trying to drag their feet until this August 1st thing passes in the hopes that this court will take them at their word. I will not take them at their word. And I want to vote to put their back against the wall and get their feet on the ground moving, because what Ms. Anderson and the other residents up there at Bono are dealing with is intolerable. It's unacceptable. And we need to do whatever we can to protect them and to prevent that from happening to anybody else in the county.
Do any of our judges in the gallery have any questions, comments?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and just appears there's probably several issues within that definition that raise questions of how do you establish. So, for instance, the first issue is how do we even know that a company is crypto mining? And the truth is, I don't really know we have that answer yet. I think we can get some of that from the Public Service Commission. I think there's a set of regulations that they're following in order to get the approval from the PSC, but I think that's going to be a hurdle that we're going to have to overcome, and I don't really have a great answer for you, but I think that's one issue. And then the second issue is you bring up, what's primary? And that, additionally, I don't know. But the problem is what we don't want to do, though, is we likely don't want to criminalize a residential facility that happens to try and do crypto mining on the side. And we don't want to criminalize any commercial behavior that might be, I don't know, trading cryptocurrency, you know, but they're not actually mining currency, they're just selling it on an online market. So it is an element, it is part of, you know, something that would have to be proved in court, and I wish I had a perfect answer for you here, but I really don't.
Any additional questions or comments from our JPs? Yes, Justice Tyler?
I'm just trying to understand this, just processing all this information here. And maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but basically someone who's close to this crypto mining would contact the sheriff's office in a non-emergency line to file the complaint, mm-hmm. is how that works.
Uh-huh.
And then they would come out and they would be equipped with equipment, right, and trained to take that measurement and then document it. Is that how it's executed on the fine part of it?
That's correct.
Okay.
This would not be, although every deputy could be equipped, I don't think that would probably be wise. I think probably the easier issues to have a deputy that's equipped to understand how a decibel meter works, a deputy that's equipped to go to district court and deal with these kind of issues, and just have probably one primary person that's trained and understands how to take the measurements, how to deal with it. And we'll find also often with any criminal issue that, especially in district court, judges kind of have their own guidelines that they like to see things done, so that one individual can figure out, okay, you know, this particular district judge wants three readings on three different days, maybe, or, you know, so all that to say is it wouldn't necessarily mean equipping the entire sheriff's office, but it definitely would be more equipment, more time, and asking somebody to do more work in the sheriff's office.
Thank you.
Could I ask another question?
Absolutely.
Bill, you were saying that it sounded to me like you're saying this doesn't discriminate. It kind of applies similar situations to crypto mining that we apply to other things like cell phone towers. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure I understand. Yes, it does discriminate. It does. I mean, we are intentionally discriminating here in this case. And there's sometimes discrimination we think of as a bad thing. It's not always bad. And maybe that's the wrong word, but that's the word the statute that was passed uses. It says we're not allowed to discriminate between crypto mining facilities, it uses a different term, and data processing centers. So we are not including all data processing centers in this ordinance. It is strictly crypto mining facilities.
So So on August 1st, when that state law takes effect, will that nullify this ordinance?
No. No, it should not nullify this ordinance because at that point we'll have already, assuming it's passed, then that will be in effect and we're not discriminating beyond August 1st. However, if we go back and change it in September and we're still discriminating against crypto mining current or centers, then that could be an issue. Then we probably would need to broaden it to all data center.
Okay.
Which there's a possibility we could. It's just once we broaden it to all data centers, then it's the potential Axiom problem. Not that Axiom is outside the county right now, but what if Axiom wanted to? And they're processing lots of data, and they have lots of computers, or Hewlett Packard, or whoever. And so it just creates a different set of problems once we include anybody with a server.
Sure, I understand. I had a question, trying to get after all that. If Ms. Anderson filed a complaint with the Sheriff's Department on August 1st, if we pass this next week, and you're saying it would be about 2 months before it went to court?
Potentially. I think I'd have to lean on the Sheriff's Office, but most of the time, any traffic citation, any type of citation, there's a certain amount of time before that court hearing. It takes usually about 2 months, though, to get in front of a district court judge.
And there'd be no way to issue another citation until that judgment was?
No. You could issue another citation. There could be a citation issued between. However, I'll just say right now, if Sheriff Riles asked me, should I go issue another citation, I would tell him, no, don't issue another citation until a judge has rendered a decision on that first, and then we can move from there. Because if we're going out issuing citations every day, it's just, honestly, it's a manpower issue. Is that our code enforcement officer does so many things already, the time that it takes for that would still be quite a bit. And honestly, we also need to tee it up and see what happens in district court first before we go out writing 60 different citations before it goes before a district court judge.
So there's no way we could get, if they, the noise that Ms. Anderson's dealing with is what I'm concerned with now. The time between the time the citation was issued and then, there's no way to stop that noise.
We're just not equipped with the tools to force anybody to stop. Unfortunately, this goes back to our issue of what does the quorum court have as its tools that it's been given by the state legislature? And as much as many of us wish that the quorum court had the ability to go out and pull the plug, wherever that plug is, we just don't have that ability. So the only tool that we have is creating a criminal penalty. I think I've told some of y'all before, it's sort of like building a house with a hammer. Do you need a hammer to build a house? Sure, that's a great tool to have. But you can't do everything with a hammer. You only can do so many things. And this, although is not the complete answer, this is a nail. This is a piece of the answer. It's probably not the total answer. I would still encourage all of the individuals that if they're seeking something that is permanent, if they're seeking something that's temporary for that matter, this is probably a matter that may be better solved in circuit court in a civil matter than in district court in a criminal matter. That's my legal opinion. Attorneys cost money. I get that. But this is merely a piece of solving the problem. It will not solve the entire problem. And frankly, if I don't know how much money is in the crypto mining business, but they may just decide to pay the ticket. They may just decide the continuing violation is enough. I don't know. But that's all the tools that we have.
Would this county be the one, would you be the one to file for an injunction to shut it down if they persisted in violating the ordinance?
Potentially, yes. We Ms. Cruz and I, it's kind of a gray area between the county civil attorney and the prosecuting attorney. To date, I have not had to take any issue as far as an injunction to circuit court. Certainly, we haven't had to deal with that district court. Most of the time, our officers go on their own to district court, but that's something that Ms. Cruz and I would have to iron out.
Okay, thank you. I would like to say before we vote on this, there are state legislators working on solving this too. I've actually heard some of them say, we made a mistake, we're trying to fix it. So if we can't resolve this tonight or next week, know that there are people working on your behalf. We're not finished with this fight.
Justice Coates.
Yes, sir.
If I may, I would like to think that you guys could get this before the whole court with John's amendment by next week. I don't know if that's possible, but I think it would be it. I'd like to see it before the court.
If it goes through and passes committee tonight, it should go before the full court next week. Phil, I do have one other additional question. For the notification of the landowners, it was my understanding for the Bono site in particular that there were non-disclosure agreements that were in place, and that was part of the secrecy of them coming in. We didn't even know they were coming or that they purchased the land until they were there and it was a done deal. And so how would that affect, how would a non-disclosure agreement affect the notification process? Would those go first or...
First of all, I'm not aware of the non-disclosure issue. That's the first I've heard of it, so I can't really speak to that. I don't really know anything about the Bono non-disclosure agreements. But in the future, going forward, if there's a new facility, the NDA wouldn't necessarily have any effect on the permitting process. So they can have 100, they can have all the neighbors sign an NDA, but they still have to notify them, and then they'll have to file proof of the notification with the county clerk. So at the very minimum, they still have to comply with the ordinance notification process. Now, if they want to go sign separate agreements with landowners on what they've agreed to not sue or not talk, that's their own private business. They'd still have to deal with the ordinance, though.
Okay. Thank you. If there are no additional questions or comments from deputies in the gallery, do any of our Butler County residents have any questions? All right, I will entertain a motion. Vote.
Move we send it to full court.
All right, well, Ms. Margaret, do I need to do a roll call vote for that? I can just do all in favor of sending proposed ordinance 2320 to the full court, say aye.
Aye.
The ordinance passes on to the full court. And we will move on from there. All right, our next proposed ordinance is 2321. It is an ARP request for the county fire departments. And we are going to... County Administrator Higgins has been working on this religiously, and so I'm going to turn it over to him and see if he can't explain exactly what all of this is. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Coates. So what we have before us, and actually this particular ordinance is sponsored by Justice Lahowski, who wasn't able to make it tonight, so I am kind of facilitating the ordinance for him. I have been working on this for several months. So I'll kind of give you a little bit of background on this. Initially, the Fire Chiefs Association came to the Quorum Court, actually the Courts and Public Safety Committee, when I was chair in our last term when I was still on the court, and was looking for some support for, I think we talked about turnout gear, and we talked about that, but when we looked at it, it did not meet the requirements of the ARP encumbered funding. So we had to push back on that and say this does not qualify. Later on, we had another conversation with them to talk about breathing apparatus. What's that called? SCBs. All right, so the breathing apparatus. So they had a need for it. It was around $3 million for the request for ARP, but unfortunately, it did not meet the requirements for the encumbered funds of the ARP. So we have visited with the Fire Chiefs Association. I reached out to my chief in Greenbrier to say, what can we do to help support these guys? Because our volunteer firefighters do an awesome job. They're underfunded. They don't get paid. And there's lots of issues. And one of the topics that came up was maybe communications opportunities. We already knew that we had had a precedent already set where we had funded communication gear through the Faulkner County, for the Faulkner County Reserve Unit. We funded some radios for them, so we knew that it would qualify under the encumbered part. So we looked at it like potentially, maybe let's see what it would cost to upgrade them to go on the AWINS system. So that came in, the initial estimate, at around $10 million. So we kind of backed off from that and said, yeah, it's probably going to be a little more than we want to spend on that. And so reached out to our OEM office, reached out to Sheila and to Jimmy. They've been awesome to work with on this. They've really been supportive on this. And so we discovered that the firefighters currently use a VHF analog radio net. Just a shock, it's actually part of the old system that we used at the Sheriff's Department 20 years ago. So they had been using it. We know that it had dead spots. In those days, we had one, maybe two repeaters with it. So we looked to say, well, what could we do to potentially upgrade this? So I reached out to Sheila and had her run the traps on that to say what would be the cost of that if we looked at it. The initial cost, worst case scenario, came in at about $1.2 million. And my first thought was, okay, but at least we're more in the money potentially. Let's run this a little further. So at that point, we reached out to a vendor to find out actually how many transponders we have, and we have five. How many of them are actually capable of being upgraded from analog technology to digital technology? As it turned out, we have had some transponders that have been upgraded, have been repaired, and they were already there. So that $1.2 million, we were able to check off some numbers on that because our transponders are not going to have to be upgraded. There's just some reprogramming that has to be done, and so that took a big cost of it. The next thing is we actually sent out a survey to the fire departments to find out what their needs were. How many handheld radios do you need? How many vehicle radios do you need? Again, the feedback that we got was that Bologna has done a good job of spending their money actually upgrading radios. So some of their radios, maybe even most of them, were already digital. So we were able to check those radios off the list. Greenbrier already has a lot of their radios that are dual technology, which means they can talk analog and digital. So some of them don't have to be replaced. So we started whittling down on the price, and we're able to get it down to around the $600,000 mark. So we actually trimmed this in half by doing the research to find out what actually had to be replaced to get the upgrade from analog to digital. Along the way, when it looked like we were prepared last month to actually bring this before the court and to propose this, we ran into a little bit of a hiccup because the guys are toned out. The firefighters are toned out by department. So there are 23 departments, and they're toned out. So how many of you guys, just Allison, maybe you can help me with this, how many of you guys have watched Emergency back in the old days? Did you watch it? Come on, tell me you did. I'm not the only one here.
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, with an analog system, when they tone them out, is when the dispatcher actually hits a button and sends a tone out. Each of the 23 departments has a different tone. It makes a different noise over the radio, and firefighters learn to recognize their tone as opposed to other tones. That's a tone out. So we found out that you cannot do a tone out on a digital system. So it's like, hang on a second, what are the options that we have? So again, we found out that talking with the Bologna Fire Department and with the Greenbrier Fire Department, they're using an app called I Am Responding. And I Am Responding is an app on the phone. It can do call outs for the officers. It can tell them about the fire. Lots of information that just a simple tone out doesn't do. They get that a lot quicker than they would even through dispatch, because dispatch is doing both of those. So, again, reach back out to Jimmy with OEM to see what it would take to get all of the fire departments on I Am Responding. We knew that Greenbrier was using it, knew that Bologna was using it, maybe even another one. I don't know if it was Beaver Fork or somebody, but somebody else was using it. And I was getting good reviews from I Am Responding on that, and other fire departments around the country are also using it. So it seemed to fit the need. We had to make sure it was ISO certified. It is. That was another little hoop that we had to run through. So we're able to actually put a price together. And do you guys have the spreadsheet before you? Let me see. I brought it with me to hand out. But I actually, it's probably more information than you guys are looking for. This is by department. There you go. You got one? So this breaks it out by department, both on mobile radios, base radios, and portable radios, also the transponders, and it also puts the price in there for a 5-year subscription with I Am Responding on this. And so the total comes out to $556,549 even. So I'm actually pretty pleased with the fact that we started out with around $1.2 million. And by really whittling it down to find out what the actual needs are to cut it a little more than in half of what our initial thought was. Any questions?
Randy, what's the difference in a mobile? I guess is that a mobile phone and a
radio? So a mobile is a radio, handheld, but walkie-talkie?
Is that walkie-talkie?
That is correct. No, I'm sorry. A mobile goes in the vehicle. A portable is a walkie-talkie. Did I get that right, Jimmy? Okay. Just want to make sure. Yeah. And so there is actually, we've reached out to the vendor, and we have a installation cost. So handhelds don't have to be installed, but the ones in the vehicles do have to be installed. So our plan is to facilitate this distribution through the Office of Emergency Management. And so the vendor would actually pull out the old radio, install the new radio in the fire trucks, and all of those, the ones that they actually
need. So they would still go to radios and not their individual cell phones?
No, it's two different deals. So the radios are for the trucks to be able to communicate back to dispatch and everything. I Am Responding is their tone out information. And also the things that they track, like what time did the call come in, what time did they respond saying I am on my way, what time did they actually arrive on there. A lot of that data would be in their I Am Responding so that when they get back and start working on their report, they would have that information in their application. And matter of fact, thank you, Justice Coach. I'll share this with you. This is a handbill for I Am Responding. And you have one. And so that'll probably answer some of your questions on it. Actually, I wish I had one something like that for law enforcement. That'd be pretty cool. I've got one left.
Other questions about the I Am Responding the program itself. If it goes to our cell phones, when those cell phones are like mine is on silent right now, for an emergency like that, would that tone out or that call out, would that override that silent?
So, Justice Coates, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to reach out to one of the subject matter experts, and I think Chief Hillman is here and who uses it. Can you answer a couple questions for us?
Yes.
Come on up here. He actually utilizes the application that I wouldn't have.
So that is an option that you have on the app. You can make it to where if it's on silent, it doesn't do anything at all, or you can make it where if it's on silent, that it will let you know.
Override.
And will it also go to their smartwatches?
I'm sorry?
Will it go to their smartwatches as well?
Yes, go to your watches as well.
Cell radios and program radios.
I'm the most directionally challenged person that probably any of you have ever met, and so this question is probably logistically based, but I don't know where Liberty is.
Liberty is out on Highway 64.
So it's not Bologna.
Halfway. You know where the catfish house is out there on Highway 64, the old
8-mile store?
Yeah, about 8-mile store.
Do you know where 8-mile store?
Yeah.
My question is, why do they have so many? I mean, is that a big area to cover? Because it said they had 15 mobiles.
In the years past, they've not spent their money on radios like the other fire departments.
Oh, so some of the other ones have already purchased things.
That's correct. Okay. So if you think about it, the ones with the highest numbers probably have the highest needs because they're the least funded.
Okay, that makes
these
sense.
These mobiles will go in the personal vehicles, I think?
No.
No. No. The mobiles will only go in the fire apparatuses.
Okay. More fire crews than I realize.
Mm-hmm. Any additional questions from the committee?
Move we send it to full court.
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Passes and we'll move on to the full court.
Okay.
And Ms. Margaret, on the proposed ordinance, the 2321, that was sponsored by Justice Lahowski in our. It says Justice Coates on the top of that, so we do.
We'll get them then.
Change.
No problem.
Our next order of business is proposed ordinance 2322, which is the ARP request for the criminal justice counseling. And I am going to turn this over to Captain Hillman, if she can explain a little bit about what it is and then. The reason that we see a need for this.
Hello, Jennifer Hillman, Captain with Faulkner County Sheriff's Office. So the money that we're asking for today is going to help fund something that's coming January 1st, and it's going to be for all first responders. It's a new state law. For this year, we want to go ahead and start that because the need is so great. Obviously, what we do, as you know, is very traumatic for our people, and they need additional assistance. Paying for that is a huge burden, and we don't want them to have additional burdens for things that they've already had to take on because of the job. So this money will help pay for that through the end of the year, for sure. That's kind of short and sweet, but that's what it's for.
So. My understanding is that when counseling is needed after a traumatic event or traumatic call, if the first responder decides that they want to go get counseling for that situation, they will not have to pay the copay that goes along with their insurance.
That's correct.
Correct?
Yes.
This isn't something they're going to be forced into doing. It's just if,
no,
if,
this
they,
is,
if they want it, it's there.
Absolutely. We are mandated by state law to provide these services. So we want, obviously, to follow law, but we've been doing this prior to this. Most of it's been done pro bono by incident counseling, which has been a huge blessing to our people. They started seeing critical folks the end of last year, and that's been huge. It's changing people's lives. But there are two different state laws now that mandate that we do this, and so we're just trying to get ahead of the ball game and make sure that people have the services they need.
So the state law states that it has to be offered, but that the officer does not have to go unless they
That's
choose
correct.
To go.
But we do have to offer the services if they so choose.
And this is for all first responders?
This one for us is under a law enforcement. There's a new one that's additional that's coming January 1st. It's going to be all first responders, and that includes dispatchers.
And what about the coroner's office?
I believe that they fall under that. I don't want to speak, though.
So what we were asking about earlier, that that this will cover the coroner's office as well?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to clear that up. Right. Any additional questions or comments?
Do y'all choose a counselor, or does the employee get to choose that counselor?
They can choose if they have somebody. Fortunately, NSYNC has culturally competent clinicians. They specialize in first responders. We've been utilizing them because they've been providing services to us that far extend what typically counselors are able to, but they can absolutely go see whoever they choose.
So deputies have questions or comments.
Did we motion to put this on the floor for discussion? I'm sorry.
Technically, in committee, you don't have to use a motion to put it, but you're okay. You can, or it's up to you.
Sure, I'll motion that we put this on the floor for discussion.
Second.
Thank you. And with our previous discussion, I would entertain a motion to pass this along to the full court.
Make a motion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ordinance passes. I'm sorry. The
ordinance is sent to full court.
Thank you, Philip. Thank you all for your time. Thank you, Dr. Hunter. Any additional announcements? And with that, all those in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.